How would you like to attend a conference and hear Matt Harrison, Craig Parton, Jonathan Fisk, Will Wheaton, Chris Roseborough, and Al Schmidt? You're invited to the 2014 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 13th and 14th in Collinsville, Illinois. Registration is $100 per person. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 13th and 14th in Collinsville, Illinois. issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We had talked about this some time back when a church court case was brought in the United Methodist Church against the Reverend Thomas Ogletree. He had performed the same-sex wedding of his son. Of course, the official teaching of the United Methodist Church still sees homosexuality as incompatible with God's teaching on human sexuality and marriage as well. But now the church court case has been dropped. Does that signal a change in the church's teaching? Joining us to talk about this, John Lamparis. He's United Methodist Action Director for the Institute on Religion and Democracy. John, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd.
Does the dropping of this church court case against the Reverend Thomas Ogletree, does it signal a change in the United Methodist Church's teaching?
Well, a couple things that are important to keep in mind are, first of all, Bishop McLee does not speak for the denomination as a whole. The only body that can speak for our church as a whole is the General Conference, which meets once every 4 years. And even the General Conference is somewhat limited in that we have a core doctrine. They're called doctrinal standards that are a specific set of documents that United Methodist ministers vow to uphold and maintain at their ordination, and which actually our rules say cannot be amended, even by General Conference. And so there's obviously a difference between our on-paper policies and doctrine and our de facto effective policies and doctrine. And essentially what Bishop McLee has said is that he is making a declaration of independence of sorts from the rest of the denomination, saying that the church in the New York metro area will only effectively have whatever United Methodist policies and doctrines he unilaterally and selectively decides to follow. But that doesn't mean that it's the case for any area outside of the New York metro area.
He made a pretty broad statement to the press, that is Bishop Martin McLee. He said, church trials produce no winners. Church trials result in harmful polarization and continue to harm brought upon our gay and lesbian brothers and sisters. It sounds like he not only doesn't intend to take this case to court, but any case involving this situation to the church court.
And that's what's far more significant in the case of Dr. Ogletree, is essentially, at the press conference, I was listening to it, it was essentially admitted that this was a sort of green light for clergy in that conference to go ahead and violate our denomination's covenant in this area, and feel free to do so with impunity.
Has there been...
Which,
go ahead.
Sorry, go on. I was going to say, which I would just also add in terms of the issue of compassion, I would strongly disagree with the narrative of Bishop McLee that the liberal faction has a monopoly on compassion for members of the LGBT community. I mean, I'll be the first to admit that those of us on the conservative side have often justly earned a bad reputation by failing to be more compassionate in addressing the needs of our neighbors in this area. But the view of love presented in biblical Christian tradition is radically different from the more secular, I'm okay, you're okay, we just need to be affirmed view of love that we hear from Bishop McLee and others who are more on this side of the aisle.
What's your reaction to one of the statements from Reverend Ogletree himself, who said, and I quote, it's a shame that the church is choosing to, this is before the prosecution was dropped, it's a shame that the church is choosing to prosecute me for this act of love, which is entirely in keeping with my ordination vows and with Methodism's historic commitment to inclusive ministry embodied in its slogan, quote, open hearts, open minds, open doors.
Well, I think that was probably a media savvy statement of Dr. Ogletree, but I think Dr. Ogletree is someone who is smart enough and knowledgeable enough to know better. Open hearts, open minds, open doors is not the doctrine of the United Methodist Church. It is just a marketing slogan that some people came up with a dozen years ago when they realized, oh no, our denomination is rapidly losing members. We got to do something to turn around. Maybe if we use this as a marketing slogan, it will draw more people into our churches. But the core doctrinal standards are very clear in taking a very high view of scriptural authority and even saying explicitly that no Christian whatsoever is free from the obedience of the Old Testament commandments, which are called moral. And I went to a very liberal seminary myself, but I've not seen any serious argument that sexual relations outside of man-woman marriage are compatible with the specific doctrinal standards that are unchangeable in the United Methodist Church.
What are your concerns for the United Methodist Church in the future? Because we've watched it happen with other denominations that have permitted in practice things like the performance of same-sex marriage or the kind of quiet ordination of gay clergy against the church's official teaching, knowing full well, I think, that you permit this long enough and pretty soon church teaching will reconcile itself with these practices that start as exceptions and end up as rules.
Well, I think that I obviously am concerned with the basic honesty and integrity of our church. If we cannot trust ministers and bishops of our church to keep their word that they gave at their ordination, what basis is there for trust left in this denomination? And in the other, as for the precedent of other denominations, what we have seen in every single case is that when churches have gone down the road of kind of an effective liberalization, that first a de facto liberalization, and then eventually church law catches up with reality and endorses what has already been going on, then in every case there's been a split in those churches and a very significant loss of members. And that was, ironically, at the press conference, the same road that Bishop McLee and others were promoting, while somehow, somewhat bizarrely, saying that that would somehow help unity of the church. Which what we have currently right now is a bit like two people who are already formally divorced, which is essentially what Bishop Lee's saying. If he's saying he's not going to follow the church's standards, but still living together in the same house, kind of glaring at each other from across the room, not talking to one another, and waiting for the other one to be the first to leave the house.
So what should happen in terms of a response to what you called earlier in our conversation, Bishop McLee's declaration of independence?
Well, I think other bishops need to step up and be willing to publicly make clear their support for our doctrinal standards and our integrity, and some have done that. For instance, Bishop Scott Jones has of Kansas and Nebraska has publicly said earlier this year that if you're not willing to live in accordance with our denomination standards and you're not going to work through our established mechanisms for change, then this isn't the denomination for you. And even if 100 of you do same-gender weddings, I'm not going to be intimidated. I'll suspend all 100 of you, and we'll move to trial in 100 cases. And we need to see more of that kind of leadership from our bishops. And I also think that it's important to remember that Bishop McLee and others represent a demonstrably shrinking minority of what is a global church. So I think that those of us at the grassroots level need to not abandon our support to our local congregations that are more traditionalist. But it is time to rethink and demand better leadership from the denominational structure beyond the local congregation that is not demonstrating the sort of accountability and the sort of integrity and honesty that we should expect.
What is your sense of the kind of average, if we can even speak of such a thing, the average United Methodist Church member? What do you think their reaction is to the latest story about dropping the church court case prosecuted against the Reverend Thomas Ogletree?
Yeah. Well, it's very difficult to say. Keep in mind that we are a global church, not just with about 60% of United Methodists live in the United States, but another large portion live in sub-Saharan Africa, and smaller numbers live in Asia and in Europe. And I think, an average Nigerian United Methodist is going to be very different from an average Californian United Methodist. But from what I've heard from African brothers and sisters, is that if the church were to move in a strongly liberal direction on sexual morality, that that would likely stop the global nature of our denomination by driving African churches away. And I would think in the United States, it's very hard to talk about a typical grassroots person, but I think a lot of people at the grassroots level are very upset by this, that they don't quite understand all the complexes of our policy, and they don't understand why somebody doesn't just push a magic button to fix it all. And but there's getting to be, I think, a lot of impatience on both the more orthodox and the more progressive sides of wanting this conflict to be over and wanting to be able to live out in a church in a way that is in line with our very different values.
John Lomperis is United Methodist Action Director for the Institute on Religion and Democracy. You'll find a link to the Institute on Religion and Democracy at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Tammy Ross talking about a Dallas Morning News story from the same-sex, this very same story, how the Dallas Morning News covered it with the same-sex wedding performed by this Methodist pastor. Stay tuned.
Would you like to help your son or daughter achieve their maximum athletic potential? Hi, this is Jeff Schwarz, General Manager of Lutheran Public Radio. My friend, fellow parishioner, and certified athletic trainer, Kevin Reisick, is the owner and operator of Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. Arch Fitness specializes in sports performance training for middle school to collegiate level athletes. For more information, call Kevin at 618-670-6952. 618-670-6952.
In Higher Things, we believe that if you put good Christ crucified for you Lutheranism into a youth, you'll get a good Christ crucified for you Lutheran youth. Join us this July at the Higher Things Crucified Youth Conferences in Florida, Wisconsin, Utah. Check us out at www.higherthings.org. Higherthings.org. Dare your youth to be Lutherans this summer.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Christ Lutheran, Jackson, Mississippi. Prince of Peace Lutheran, San Diego, California. Trinity Lutheran, Tryon, North Carolina. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Dallas, Texas. Calvary Lutheran, Yuma, Arizona. St. Paul Lutheran, Milford Center, Ohio. Peace Lutheran, Chehalis, Washington. Christ Lutheran, Noblesville, Indiana. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Lexington, Kentucky. And St. James Lutheran, Baltimore, Maryland. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support, the Issues Etc. 300.